You are listening to the Mission Matters Podcast Network, where we amplify the stories of entrepreneurs, executives, and experts.
Muy buen día, mi gente, and welcome to Hispanic Wealth Matters, episode número dos. Today, we get the privilege of having my very dear friend, Norma Dominguez, chat with us about her path into becoming a real estate investor. She is an incredibly accomplished individual. She graduated from Brown University, Harvard Kennedy School, and is currently serving as the Chief Financial Officer at Accelerate Housing Group here in Los Angeles. Norma is going to share with us her philosophy in how she decides to buy real estate, her story, and what motivated her to start buying real estate, and advice in what she would give young millennials in looking at how they should be looking at buying real estate and the decision process that she would advise. It is a thrill to have her on as my very, very first guest. When I looked at and thought about this podcast, I couldn't envision a better person to start us off, as she has not only motivated me, but also taught me a lot of things along the way. Let's get into the show. Here's Norma. Okay, so guys, today, as I was telling you, we have my dear friend, Norma Dominguez, here with us. And when I was thinking about, you know, the design of this project and thinking about really what I wanted it to look like, and I was thinking about my very first guest, I couldn't think of anyone other than you, Norma, to be my very, very first guest. I kept thinking about it and going over it, and it had to be you because of how inspiring I think you've been, not just to me, but to a lot of people around you. And I think that there is a lot to be gained from just your story and how you operate. Not only are you a chief financial officer of a company in real estate that is where a CEO is a female and the CFO is a female, which is incredibly unique in any landscape that you think of. Mm-hmm. But also you yourself are a real estate investor and have built a portfolio of properties on your own. And I think that doing that as a Latina is incredibly powerful. And I think you and I have chatted before how there is a movement that I'm seeing of so many more Latinas feeling that empowerment today to go out and invest on their own. So welcome to the show, and thank you for being my very, very first guest on Hispanic Wealth Matters.
Oh, Jose, thank you so much for having me. I'm honored to be here.
So let's just kind of get into it. Mm-hmm. Tell me about your upbringing in terms of how you grew up, where you grew up, and the first inspiration into sort of wanting to buy real estate. Like, tell me about that.
Okay, thank you. Well, I grew up in Wilmington, which is a neighborhood in the city of Los Angeles. My mother is Mexicana, my dad's from El Salvador, and they, as young immigrants, took the plunge and bought a little house in Wilmington, which we still own today, and my mom, you know, owns today. And in the height of interest rates, right now we're like screaming, 6%. I think it was like 13, 14, 15%.
That's right. And what year was this when they buy this house?
That was 1979, because that was the year that I was born. And that was, you know, the impetus of them, you know, wanting to plant some seeds and buy their own home. So that little casita really has given us so much. Mm-hmm. Not only did it give us a safe space and somewhere where you know our family built memories and clearly a family, but in the later years, I think my mom is a great example, great fiduciary who you've worked with.
I met your mom, and she is an incredible just leader. I would say that's the word that comes to mind. She's tough.
She's a tough cookie, and she, you know, was a great steward of that asset. But that was you know, our family home. And my sisters would joke that my love for real estate came from Monopoly. I kid you not, that's Monopoly the time. I don't know. I guess I thought it was so much fun to buy property and make money off of something you own, that somebody's helping you. So really early on, I understood that concept, and that was all for fun, clearly. But as I, you know, fast forward, you know, went to college and went to graduate school and came back to LA, that was, must have been like 2007-ish. And that's when things were still on fire. Like, the prices were crazy. And intuitively, but also analytically, I'm like, this isn't sustainable. So even though I was making decent money, I was already with a big bank at that point in the commercial lending space. I went home with my parents. I'm like, I need a place to land. I'm not committing to, you know, I mean, I knew I wanted to buy, but it was just not the time. And then clearly I didn't stay there for long, but I had other like-minded girlfriends. Like one was an attorney making great money and we moved in together. So we were roommates, everybody making good money, but I think analytically thought like, let's save money and, you know, that, you know, what happens after that. So that's what happened. Live with my two friends for a while. And then I took my step into buying like my first piece of property. And I knew at that point that I wanted it to be a multifamily. Like I understood before, I didn't know, I hadn't read about what BRRRR is, right? The bill, buy, rehab, rent, you know, rinse, repeat type stuff. Yeah. That's what I did. I bought something that was undervalued. It needed upgrades.
Take me to that moment in time. Now, I know that you had an incredibly successful career in the commercial real estate space, mm-hmm. but now you've been living with friends and you're mm-hmm. taking a step into essentially a multifamily property. Sounds like, mm-hmm. was it a duplex? Sounds like?
It was a triplex.
Units. Even more. Mm-hmm. And so now you're not only taking a leap into becoming a homeowner, but also a landlord at the exact same time. What's going through your head at that moment?
At that moment was that I was going to live on the property so that I could do both. I could be the landlord. That wasn't scary to me. Now, 15 plus years after being a landlord, I chuckle. Like landlording isn't for everybody.
Yeah, however, you and I have had that conversation before.
Yes, but that's what property management firms are for, you know, so you could still be a multifamily investor if you don't want to be the landlord. But I wasn't scared of it. Call it, you know, what you don't know, you're not afraid of. Like I was like, I figured that I would figure it out. But the remodel was the bigger hurdle. Mm. So this is where I go back to my mom, where she, you know, help me out with a family loan, loan so that I could rehab the unit. I had enough to take down the property and kind of do like a little lipstick job. And she gave me a little bit more so that I could, you know, do a little bit more and really live, you know, in my little casita. And that was my bachelorette pad for a number of years in the Silver Lake area of Los Angeles.
Silver Lake, oh my God. I mean, what a vision at that point, right? Silver Lake to what it is today.
Oh my gosh. I didn't know what it would, you know, how it would appreciate how it has. But yes, very, very fortunate.
And so when you look at that, I mean, one of the things that I've enjoyed about working with you, and I think it's not only you, but I think a lot of women sort of have this naturally in them, is that you're very analytical at how you look at things in the long term. I think that's a very stronger female trait, where you think of more global than you do in the immediate sort of reward situation. And what's been fun for me in the stuff that we've done together is that you don't really panic. You look at things in a way where it's more a bigger picture. You look at the macro mm-hmm. and down the line. And what I enjoyed, and I've heard you do this on stage before, is the way that you teach women to do that, right? And kind of sort of not freak out in the moment, but kind of look at things bright.
Yes.
Yes, where does that come from? Is that something that's natural to you? Is that something you learn? Where does that idea?
I think it's a little, it's probably natural. If we look at sticker prices on real estate, even today, like there is all the reasons to squirrel away and just hide. But if you are interested in real estate and, you know, you and I are looking at a transaction now, I mean, the sticker prices is big. So I'll walk people through really quickly, like my thinking, my husband and I want to buy this bigger space. We have a nice place now, but if I look at demographic trends, the millennials are coming into their home buying years because mm-hmm. they are going to want to have family, some of them. And we have zeroed in on a couple of particular neighborhoods. So will there be more houses on the market in the spring, summer? Probably. Yeah, sure. But we are we have such a niche, almost even like a radius, a few mm-hmm. blocks. So our philosophy is as they come up, if you know, like if it makes sense, then let's go for it. And for us, what makes sense would be like buying something where the square footage is selling at a discount because of whatever, like it's ugly. And again, back to remodel. So for those, you know, of our friends listening, women, men, like, don't be afraid of a remodel. I know that is where I think that's been the distinction where I've been able to create equity and value is getting into like a fugly, a fugly little house where I just see that I see the potential. And then over some time, you can really add equity. Like I have another piece of a house where I had long-term tenants. Then when they moved out, kind of a total, you know, just painting job because the rents weren't going to increase enough to really for a complete remodel to make sense. But just this week, I'm going to be putting HVAC in it, which is, as we know, it's an important feature in properties, you know, in the rental space. And then down the line, when that tenant leaves, I will likely remodel the kitchen. So you don't have to do everything at once, but definitely you need to do enough to garner, you know, a decent rent. And I like to stay not luxury, but in the, like where I would live, where the 30-year-old Norma would have liked to live, somewhere it's nice, well-kept, ownership pride. And that's how I do it. So sometimes you have to put in a lot of money and sometimes just 15K at a time will make a huge difference.
I think that I really like what you said about getting to really know where you want to invest and become super familiar with that market, right?
Yes.
I get this a lot. I get people tell me, I want to invest. I don't care where it is as long as I make money. But it's not that simple, right? There are dynamics. The market is alive, and there are dynamics that happen within markets that aren't that simple. So I was telling people somebody about the area here in LA, the area of Lancaster, and they go, well, why do you like Lancaster? I said, because there's an air base there now that has 1,500 job openings. And I know that in the future, that's going to bring employment. And when employment comes, people need to live somewhere. And therefore, I think that that's a good place to invest into a rental. It's also in LA County. So if you decide to go, for example, Section 8 housing, you get LA County Section 8 pricing, even though it's in a suburb and outside of the main city, there's idea. But that's a lot different than just saying a random place. Like there's got to be a logic to what you're doing rather than I just want to make money. Because, you know, you and I both have multiple properties and it's not easy. Like it takes labor to be able to get a property to perform and then maintain it performing, right?
Absolutely.
Switching tracks a little bit, if you are now, you know, to talk to that 30-year-old Latina, what would you say, and that's afraid of buying a home or is concerned about buying a home, what is your advice to that lady?
My advice would be to focus in on like your income and your expenses, because I feel like if people can get it comfortable with, you know, what are your good expenses? And, you know, 30-year-old me, I wasn't a big spender on, you know, on a lot of things. I mean, there sí me doy mis lujos, but not everything is a lujo just because I could afford it.
Right.
So, you know, some would call it frugal, but I didn't. Like I drove like the truck I had in college, I think, you know, well into working years, and then just recently changed a car after, you know, driving it down for 12 years. So, you know, that's one philosophy. I would say, you know, you can do it. And it really is just a matter of then looking at your income. And that means retooling yourself, getting a new skill set. There's so much information, ways to get to amplify our skill set or improve our skill set and jump to the next company. It really is. And I say this to younger women, like everywhere you go, be a performer. And then when it's in, and if you look around and you can, you know, increase your salary by a little bit more, then obviously you have other things to consider. But, you know, if it all makes sense, work culture, et cetera, then take the next leap, because it really that increase in your income, you know, as a mortgage lender, your ability to borrow is your ability to repay that the loan. So it's so the higher the income, the more loan you can take out. So that's what I would tell young women is and men is focus on your finances, clear your debt. We all had debt. I had debt, you know, getting out of college. Be frugal to the extent that, you know, you're comfortable with that without sufrir. Like, I don't think you have to be financially prudent and not enjoy life. Right. I think everything is a balance. And then I would say become familiar with what the area, just like we were talking about, and be active in looking at those neighborhoods so that you go to the open houses, see what is of value, and then go into the stuff that's not nice either, because you'll see that some things you don't have to drop down walls. It could be very easy to do, you know, a facelift. And when you see people working, like contractors, go in there and get their phone number and, you know, expand your Rolodex professional. They feel like that has really been key for me. But it would start with like getting, you know, walk your talk. So don't just sit, you know, be a Redfin shopper, like go out there, go to open houses.
I love that you said that. I think that's so huge. I get that so much. People try to buy homes from their desk, from their computer, or from their phone, right? And I say that all the time. I go, look, you got to get in the market. You got to get in there and go physically look at stuff. Yeah. I think that that is huge. And I think that what really happens through that exercise is less the feeling of, I can't do this, and more the feeling that I can do this.
Yeah.
I think once you actually get in there and you actually see, touch, feel, smell, you're like, yeah, okay, this is possible. I think that there's more of that impact than the opposite if you actually get out and look at property in real life.
I completely agree. And I think it signals, you know, for those of us who believe in kind of like energy that we put out there, I think it signals, you know, energy to the universe, like, all right, I'm ready. Like, I'm doing this for real. And I think it brings in the right people. You know, I have a great real estate team, and that makes a huge difference too. I love your tagline, who you work with matters. I absolutely believe that's true.
You and I, taking a little bit of a segue, because Norma and I really connect on this. And in fact, she pointed me and gave me goosebumps when we had this conversation probably a couple months ago. What comes to mind, Norma, if I say redlining?
Redlining is a loss of like wealth for our community over generations. You know, communities of color have really lost out on years of generational wealth because of redlining.
Mm-hmm. When I have conversations, and my story is very similar to yours, in my story, my there was a Northridge earthquake, and we were, you know, apartment renters, and I say this line often, where I say my mom, in her limited English but infinite wisdom, was somehow able to navigate FEMA paperwork and got us our first home in the city of Winnetka. It was $192,000. That home then, you know, gave birth to my sister's UCLA education, my first homes, multiple businesses. Mm-hmm. It gave birth to so much, and it's still standing there today. It is as a rental today. And so it becomes a situation where changing of that home changes generational dynamics over time. Right. And I was just having this conversation on this topic recently. And I was telling my friend that I said, listen, my daughters know her tios, her daddy, her mommy having multiple homes. Her vision of real estate is different. It's not just I'm going to dream of one day having a house. It's I'm going to have multiple homes myself. Like, she knows, my four-year-old knows we're going to our Miami house, daddy, or, you know, we're going to Abuela's big house in Bakersfield. Like, she knows that her family has multiple property because she's growing up in that environment. That switch is generational changing, right? Just how mom in your world bought that home, and now you grow up in a home knowing this is the way you grow up. So your parameters, your standards become completely different. And kudos to our parents for having the bravery of doing that in a time that is very, very difficult. It's difficult to do now, right? And then imagine they did it back then. It's just incredible.
They did it now, and we're able to leverage, right? And that I think is where the generational wealth happens, because while we don't touch the house in Wilmington anymore, but that leverage that helped me build, you know, my portfolio than I, you know, have done with my siblings. And I know that they'll, you know, will do it to their children or to my children. Like, it is that like ripple effect of opening doors and giving each other kind of that ability to buy real estate and then start their own generational wealth.
You touched the point of shelter, and I think that that's super important. And it's something that, as a lender, I dealt with a lot over the last year, because investors were displacing a lot of renters. They decided mm-hmm. that they wanted to just sell their houses and take the equity that they had appreciated since 2020 from the pandemic starting. As we know, that we had equity appreciation of 20% plus, and they were like, great, I'm gonna cash out, I'm done. And I would get calls often of families that were like, well, now what do I do? Now I got to go, you know, find another home to live in. And they were in a position where they were the way that they lived, the quality of life that they had was immediately being changed by them. Mm-hmm. What that's mm-hmm. outside of their control. So I share with my clients that when you buy a primary residence, and I know we've talked a lot about investing today, but when you buy a primary residence, you're buying more mm-hmm. than an investment. You're buying that shelter, that payment predictability, and the idea that is not easy for someone just to take that away from you. What would you say about that in terms of your first purchase?
My first purchase was because I did, you know, need a place to live at some point. You know, I could have rented with friends, but you know, the time and the opportunity presented itself to, you know, pull the proverbial trigger and buy something. But to your point about predictability, I also and back to our income and expenses to that young woman, like, I kind of like to know what I owe for living, because that really then will impact. We haven't talked about this, but like my savings and what I put in for my future retirement, because okay. that is important to me and my husband. Like, we do have, you know, a dream of retiring or, you know, scaling back our work, you know, in our mid-50s, and that requires a certain level of savings and investments, or, you know, investments towards passive income. So getting that expense for my living is important to me. Yeah. And so that is another reason why I say, go out, look at the numbers, you know, does it make sense? I mean, I guess it does make sense. If you know you want to stay in LA and the numbers make sense, that if you were to leave, you could rent it, then that makes sense. Now, it may not make sense if like you're buying it and, you know, some people are open to leaving the state. And mm-hmm. I tell my younger sibling, like, if I were 30 something, I would totally consider leaving California, not because it's not a great state, but there's so many opportunities in other parts of the country. But if you want to stay in Southern California, it you know, and the numbers make sense to fix your living expense, I would totally, I would do it regardless the interest rate.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
It's going to make sense.
I agree with you. Yeah. And I think that planting those seeds sooner than later make a lot more sense before life gets more complicated, as it tends to the older we get, you know. So I think I bought my first home in when I was 25, and this is pre-crash, pre to 2008, two homes in Bakersfield that I had to short sell both of them after the crash. But I still had my condo that I was living in. That condo, fast forward, I ended up making a profit on, but then I used to buy the house that I live in today, you know? Yeah. So yeah. I think, and I didn't share this story openly, because the thing is, they got to understand that market, especially real estate, is the number one creator of wealth in America. It's that for a reason, right? Over time, you're generally going to be okay, as long as you're
properly. I agree with you. And then if you take a conservative route like me, it's more of like, we have to live somewhere. So if you can fix that cost, and then your income presumably will go up, or at least it buffers you from, you know, things that happen in the future, which is, you know, the transaction we're looking at now. I look at it like, yeah, it's, you know, probably a little bit more than I wanted to, but it doesn't impede our retirement plans. And there are abilities in the future to like increase rent, so on that property and on other properties, so it'll fashion out. But that fixed rate, at least if I know what I'm working with, it's so much easier to make financial decisions. Yeah. It's the speculation where I think that, and that unknown can throw a wrench in your equation. So I'm pretty conservative and still, like, when I make a decision on the numbers, I'm pretty dogged, as you know.
Yeah, yeah. I do like that. You do a lot of the homework up front, and then you just go. And then you just know it's going to work. Yeah, I like it.
Well, I'm a swing for the fences. If I get it, great. If not, then, you know, the next one.
I loved when you said it's not, and this is how I'm interpreting it, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you were kind of saying that it's not about focusing on that mortgage payment, but looking at your expenses globally, right?
Yeah.
And I think that that's huge, because I think people really do look at that. And for example, I had a case not too long ago where the gentleman had purchased a Tesla that was costing $1,200 a month. Well, if he didn't have a $200 a month car payment and instead had a $350 a month, then we could buy the kind of home that he wanted to buy, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
At that point, it becomes kind of choices in a way, I would say.
Absolutely. I mean, I told you, I've had...
They both take you to the same place, right?
Two cars, and they were nice cars. I just upkept them, you know, and then I didn't upgrade every 4 or 5 years. Something new came out. Like, nope, you know, I had a sedan, looked nice, especially when I took it to the car wash. So yes, it's all about choices. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think that's a really great point, because people get kind of fixed on, well, now I'm adding this extra debt to my other debt, but not looking at the other way around. Where you can go calibrate your consumer debt, and then this doesn't feel that much, you know?
Yes. Well, you in your line of work, I mean, the monthly payment, even though prices are coming down with rates going up, I don't think it's changing that much. And I feel like as the millennials get into the home buying phase, like, it may stay up there. So I'm not saying go out and buy if you don't feel comfortable financially to do so. It may be still time to squirrel away some money and to, you know, find ways to increase your income. But for those of us who are seeing and have the opportunity, I think it is a good time to get in, lock in that fixed rate, fixed expense, and then go on with your wealth building ventures.
Yeah. No, I agree. Well, listen, thank you so much for all the advice. It was a treat. Like I said, in my mind, there wasn't anybody else that could really open this podcast for us other than you. And I'm so honored to call you my amiga. I'm so honored of the relationship that we have. If there's anything else you would like to share with the audience, please tell us. Other than that, this is it for our second episode.
Oh, thank you so much, Jose. No, just, you know, best to you on the podcast, and kudos for sharing conversations that, you know, we weren't privy to 10, 15 years ago. And this was a really comfortable way to do that for me. And I appreciate, you know, the opportunity to share.
Awesome. All right. All right, guys. We'll see you on episode 3.
This has been a Mission Matters Network production. Listen to this show and browse our entire catalog by visiting missionmatters.com.